Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is April 4th, 2018. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 24,264, the NASDAQ at 7,042, and the S&P at 2,644. It's a beautiful evening tonight. Blue sky started off the day with very heavy, dark clouds, so I'm happy that it's lightened up a little bit. Makes us feel like it's springtime. Tonight, our topic is a potpourri of taxes, including extensions, estimates, and 2018 planning. And I think last week I wasn't able to finish talking about multi-state issues, so I will start by talking about multi-state issues for those folks who may have to file more than one tax return or have moved and things like that. Just some highlights on that. But otherwise, I would also like to invite folks, if they have questions about taxes, to call in, just as I've done the couple times this tax season. Happy to answer questions, 610-758-8810. We are live tonight, obviously. We'll take your questions. Lori C's in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we can talk without confusion if we're live on air. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer. Again, the number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. And podcasts of prior programs are available at that website as well, and also on wdiy.org. So let's talk for a little bit about multi-state issues. When I say multi-state, it means for tax filers, sometimes you have to file more than one tax return at the state level. So maybe at the federal level, obviously it's one tax return for the year, but maybe you've moved throughout the year, or maybe you've worked in more than one state. And we are going to see more and more of this as states are grappling for revenue. They are much more interested now when employees of companies from out of state come to work in their state. So you're going to have more employers who may ask you as an employee to track your days of where you're doing work if you are assigned to go out of state on projects or meetings, etc. So we will start seeing quite possibly more multi-state returns. When you get that W-2 and you're a Pennsylvania resident and it shows Pennsylvania wages and New York wages or Delaware wages, and all of a sudden you're like, what? Well, when we work in maybe more than one state and we don't have reciprocal agreements with that state, then your employer may file accordingly those state wages for that non-reciprocal state. So we have reciprocity with New Jersey, so I can work in New Jersey, but if I'm a Pennsylvania resident, my New Jersey employer will withhold my PA tax, and vice versa. There's not reciprocity with New York. There would not be reciprocity with California and basically a lot of the non-adjoining states. But New York has no reciprocity, I think, with anyone. So if you find that your employer is asking you to track your time working in other states, that's kind of a flag for you that you may have to make sure you're paying attention and properly reporting those days worked in other jurisdictions. So that's kind of one way we might have multi-state returns and get blindsided by it, because you might not even realize that you could be exposed to this multi-state issue. And that could then mean that you're filing more than one state return and responsible for taxes to another state. Or perhaps your employer withheld taxes from that other state, and the only way you're going to get them refunded is by filing a return. So be careful of that. Another time we might have multi-state returns is if we've moved. And that's obviously where we might see it more often. But then that adds another layer of complication. So in my first example, it could be that you're working in more than one state, but you've resided in the same home forever. In this scenario where you may move, it's not just your wages that may change. It could also be where you're reporting investment income, retirement income, rental income, partnership income, you know, interest, dividends, etc. When you move, you're going to have to kind of identify the period of time of the period of time that you lived in one state, the income that gets allocated to that state versus where you have moved. So that could get a little complicated. You might think, well, maybe I could just do it based on, you know, a percentage. If I lived in one state 3 months out of 12 versus the next state 9 out of 12 and do those fractions over your total income, that could work. But perhaps you move to a state that has no income tax and you had huge gains in your portfolio, you know, on one side of that transaction. You want to be careful how you're allocating, because it might not, the percentages might not work. You might actually want to draw a line in the sand and compare what income you earned for that period of time, which is actually probably more proper. So if I had $100,000 of gains in a portfolio in the last half of the year, and now I'm living in a no tax state, obviously, you know, the three quarter allocation would not be a good idea there. I'd want the whole 100,000 on the state return. Well, there's no state return if there's no state income tax, for example, Florida. So you got to be careful with that. Pay attention. Another time where you might have multi-state issues, and I've had this happen, and more often than you might think, we might have a couple, married filing joint, husband and wife, that for federal purposes, they file a joint return, but for state purposes, they reside in different states. This sometimes happens when you might have a homestead for years and years, and your children are, you know, let's say you have lived in Pennsylvania forever and your children live in Pennsylvania and you want that home in Pennsylvania, but one spouse gets a job in Delaware or Virginia. And you know it might just be for a short time. Virginia, really, I could get to Virginia in 3 hours and 15 minutes to some friends. You know, that could be a weekend commute. So you come home for the weekend to Pennsylvania, but you're really residing in Virginia. One spouse who's working in Virginia is really residing in Virginia, has an apartment, blah, blah, blah. You could have then, therefore, married filing joint for federal purposes, but two separate state returns at the state level, one spouse filing in one state and the other filing in another state. So sometimes you have multi-state issues there as well. And guess what? You have to split the income too. You might have the husband might have, you know, ABC bank accounts you could put on his, you know, Virginia return in my example, and wife has DEF accounts you could put on her return in Pennsylvania, but then they also have GHIJK joint accounts. So it gets very complicated, but all requiring attention to how you're splitting income, and just be careful about that. When I come back, I'll talk about folks that we have that work in New York but live in Pennsylvania and some things to be aware of for that. And then we'll move on to talking about extensions and estimates and some 2018 planning. So this is the first part of our show, the first break. If you have questions, if you're a new listener, welcome. If you have questions, you can talk live on air or off air with me. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY is gearing up for our 2018 Spring Pledge Drive starting Friday, April 6th. If we can raise $15,000 before April 6th, we'll push back the start of the drive by 3 days. That will give us an entire uninterrupted weekend of the WDIY programs you love. Help us keep the drive short. Make your contribution today at WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we are talking about a potpourri of tax issues. We're first starting off with multi-state issues, and we're going to move on to talking about extensions and estimates and some 2018 planning. If you have questions, of course, listeners' tax questions or listeners' questions in general are always welcome. The phone number is 610-758-8810. If you talk live on air with us, we'd like you to mute your radio so you can hear us without confusion. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So let me wrap up my conversation about multi-state issues. We have a lot of folks in the Lehigh Valley who live here, live in Pennsylvania, but commute into New York. And it might be New York City or some surrounding area. As I mentioned, if you're working in New Jersey, we have reciprocal agreements, so it's not a big deal. Your employer is withholding Pennsylvania tax and reporting Pennsylvania wages, but New York, we do not have a reciprocal agreement. But here's what happens with New York. You're a non-resident of New York, and if you're working in New York for a New York employer, they're going to report New York wages and withhold New York tax because that is what you are subject to. You have to pay the New York tax on your New York wages. You're not a New York City resident if you're working in the city, so you at least avoid the New York City tax. Years and years ago, I believe if you worked in the city, you had to pay a New York City tax, but they did away with that a long time ago. But here's something that a lot of people don't know or realize. If you are a non-resident of New York and you're working in New York for, you know, it could be a New York employer, but if you're literally working in New York, and I mentioned you have these New York wages and have to pay that, that's all well and good. But let's say that you're also someone who travels the country for this company, and maybe you go to conferences and you're in Pennsylvania 5 days out of the year, and maybe you're in Michigan 5 days out of the year, or maybe you're checking on other, you know, satellite offices, a day here, a day there. So you're not always working in New York. Well, you can allocate your wages for the days you're outside of New York. It is a calculation. They have a special schedule for that in New York on their New York tax return. You have to factor in how many days you're actually available for work, how many days are work days, how many sick days, vacation days, weekends, and then do a calculation for the days that you're outside of New York. Not to be confused with people who work from home for New York companies. I have on occasion had people who work for an employer, a New York employer. The office is technically New York, and they work from home from time to time. Working from home does not count as days outside of New York if it's for your convenience. If your employer doesn't provide an office for you and you have to work from home, well, then obviously you're Pennsylvania employed. But if you are working from home just for your convenience and the employer has, you know, an office for you in New York, those days do not count as worked outside of New York. So some people get confused about that. But we've saved clients a lot of money when they are actually working outside of New York. So here's the issue, as I was mentioning earlier, multi-states and where we're going to see this more often is if your employer is having you track the days you're working in other states. More and more states are looking for that revenue, and more states are now going to say, oh, well, you weren't in New York those 5 days. You were in Pennsylvania, and obviously Pennsylvania is going to get their tax because you're a resident of Pennsylvania. So instead of getting those 5 days of work taxed to New York, you're going to get those 5 days taxed in Pennsylvania. But what if I had 5 days in Michigan and 5 days in California? Well, California might want that revenue, and the employer technically should have allocated 5 days of your employment income to California. So you want to be careful. It could get very tricky, but just know that it's out there and available, and that could make a difference. Some states aren't chasing that down for those minimal days, but just be aware of that. So very interesting. Also watch out, even at the city level and the local level, if you're working, for example, in Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia, but you're not living there anymore, there is a different rate. There's resident rates and non-resident rates. I believe the same thing applies in Allentown. So the city of Allentown has a high income tax rate. I think it's like 1.9875 now or something like that. But I believe there's also a non-resident rate. So you want to make sure that if you move out of a jurisdiction that has a high rate, let your employer know right away whether you've moved from New York to another state or from a city to another township, because you might have lower rates. You want to let them know right away so that they report the proper amounts on your W-2. When we get a W-2 where the employee has alerted their employer of a change of address, it's much, much cleaner. And it's also much easier to do those multi-state returns when we have to split that W-2 income. If I've had someone who was working in New York and has now moved to Pennsylvania, and they literally have Pennsylvania wages, like their office is here now. If their employer knows and they properly identify it in payroll, we can just use the W-2 to split the income. It's very easy. But if you forget to tell your employer and you go on, you know, working for months and months without alerting them that you've moved, it really complicates the split of the income from the W-2 onto the tax return. So watch out for that. Let's move on to extensions. But if folks have questions, again, the phone number is 650-758-8810. I forgot. I wanted to mention some things about New Jersey, because New Jersey had some changes this year that if you're not paying attention, man, this stuff, they're making changes. And then you say, why does my return look so different? Well, New Jersey, since you border us and our listening audience includes New Jersey. What happened in New Jersey, retirement income exclusions. So the maximum amounts, and this is from the NewJersey.gov website, maximum amounts of pension and or other retirement income that you can exclude from your gross income are being increased over a 4-year period beginning with the tax year 2017. So retirement income exclusions for 2017 and after is based on filing status and then which year. So for example, for 2017, single or head of household or qualifying widower, $30,000 exclusion on retirement income, married filing joint, $40,000, married filing separate, $20,000. And the note here is your total income for the entire year must be $100,000 or less to qualify for the retirement income exclusions. But that's a big exclusion. I believe for single people, I think it went from 20 to 30. So that was a pretty big exclusion change. So you might see more people in New Jersey not having as high of income tax. And there also is new for 2017, a personal exemption for veterans. You're eligible for a $30,000 exemption if you're a military veteran who was honorably discharged or released under honorable circumstances from active duty in the armed forces of the United States on or any time before the day, before the last day of the tax year. So you have to certify that. And I know that a lot of people are pulling out their discharge papers to get that proof that they were honorably discharged. So that's a $3,000 exemption for veterans. So that is really nice. When we come back from this second break, I'll talk to you about one more thing, especially for people who change jobs that you want to pay attention to. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and we are talking about a potpourri of taxes. And I thought I would mention a few things about New Jersey. As I mentioned, the increase in the retirement income exclusion and the personal exemption for veterans. There is one more I'd like to mention. But if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You could talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio for me. Again, that's 610-758-8810. So one other thing, when folks change jobs, if you're working in New Jersey, you pay, your employer withholds something from your pay, unemployment insurance, you see it, disability insurance, DI, UI, family leave, maybe FLI, all of these little codes are on your W-2. There's usually three of them. And for 2017, the maximum employee unemployment insurance, or what they call workforce development partnership contributions, was $142.38. The maximum employee disability insurance contribution was $80.40. And the maximum employee family leave insurance contribution was $33.50. But if you had two or more employers, you may have contributed more than the maximum amount. So if you have switched employers in New Jersey, and you could be a Pennsylvania resident with two New Jersey employers, if you're working there, they may have double withheld these amounts. So you can claim the credit for the excess withholding on your New Jersey tax return that you're filing. There's a form called NJ-2450, but I know in our software it just pops up as part of the New Jersey tax filing. So if you had already filed your return and you hadn't realized it, maybe you did it on paper, or maybe you didn't think those numbers were important to input into your software. If you use software, maybe you thought, oh gosh, I don't itemize, I don't need those deductions, I'm not going to put them in. And you didn't realize that you actually could get them refunded. You can file that New Jersey 2450, I believe, probably separately and online. So have your W-2s ready and available to do that. Also, for folks who don't realize it, New Jersey also does have a property tax relief program for homeowners. You have to be a resident, own and occupy your home in New Jersey. That is your principal residence, and you may be eligible for a homestead benefit. And then there's also a senior freeze program. The senior freeze Senior Freeze program reimburses eligible senior citizens or disabled persons for property tax increases. Eligible residents must file a 2017 senior tax freeze application. It's a PTR-1 or PTR-2. So that's important. Now, if the taxes didn't go up, then you don't need to file because it freezes the increase. So you don't have to have that increase, and you could get that rebated, I believe. So it may be worthwhile looking at that if you notice your real estate taxes have increased and you haven't filed for that prior. So that's some goodies. And for folks in Pennsylvania, there's also something called the property tax and rent rebate. And if you're 65 or over and within certain income thresholds and have real estate taxes, you may be eligible for some tax credits there as well. And renters, there's a rent rebate as well. Again, it's subject to certain income thresholds, which I don't know off the top of my head, but that might be something you could explore if you haven't, if you just are now 65 and hadn't heard of it and never thought about it. If this twerks up your ears, it might be something for you to check on. And again, it's income related, and you have to provide receipted tax bills and things like that, or a landlord has to fill out a form if you're a renter. What else did I want to point out about that? Rent rebate, tax rebate, income thresholds, limits. Can't remember. There was something else I wanted. Oh, I know. So if you're 65, that is something that you could be eligible for. But if you're a widow who is, I think, at least 60, you don't have to be 65. So that might be, you want to look for the exceptions of that age 65, if that might apply to you, or if you think you have lower income and might be eligible for that. Okay, folks, so I hope that that's a lot of good information for people. I hope it gets you thinking and realizing all that you have to pay attention to. It's not as easy as we might think, just earning money. You actually have to, think through all of these other tax issues. So let's talk about extensions for a minute, because we are at April 4th, and while I'd like to think, on the one hand, we're done, I'd like to think that. On the other hand, I don't want to think about the end because I still have so much more to do. So I've got to say, oh, I have so much time left. But for you listeners, you don't have so much time left. We only have, I think the tax returns are due April 17th, even though I keep telling myself it's April 15th because I like to give myself a little breathing room there. So the tax returns are going to be due soon. Let's pretend you haven't done it. You forgot about it. You didn't get your papers together. You don't want to bother with it. You're in denial. You're overwhelmed. You can't think about it. It's too stressful. The at least you want to do is file an extension. The IRS really, they have a problem if people don't pay. They also have a problem if people don't file. And they're going to charge penalties for either one of those. So they're going to charge penalties for failure to file, and they're going to charge penalties for failure to pay. The failure to file penalties apply based on the tax due. So you may not even have any tax due. So you think, oh, well, who cares? Well, I think there's billions of dollars sitting in the IRS coffers because people haven't filed their prior year returns for those refunds that they were due. So, a step at a time here, but at least if you extend, you kind of have it in your mind that maybe I need to do some filing. And especially if you have refunds, you definitely want to get your tax return filed if you have refunds. But even then, you may not be able to get it done. Well, what if you think you have a refund, so you're not going to worry about filing? And then you go to do your return and you realize, oh gosh, there was something on there I forgot about. Now I owe. Well, now you're going to have a failure to file penalty on that amount you owed, plus the failure to pay on the amount you owed. So minimally, if you are subject to filing, you have a W-2 or some big investment account or something, minimally, at least extend your tax return. If you think you're going to owe, you want to pay with it. And if you're not sure how much you're going to owe, or you don't have very much money, but you think you're going to owe, pay what you can in with that extension. When I come back, we're at our halfway mark. I'll talk more about extensions and kind of what you have to pay attention to and what you want to do and some options for you. Folks, if you have questions this evening, it's very quiet. I guess it's the first pretty night and people are probably out barbecuing, getting blown away by the wind. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable doing that, you can just give a question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. Phone number again, 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
This is WDIY, and the time is now 6:30. Your current temperature is 48 on Thursday. It's going to be sunny with a high near 45. Thursday night, low around 34. Friday, mostly cloudy with a high near 54. Friday night, it's going to be low around 31. And Saturday, cloudy with a high near 37. And Saturday night, it's going to be low around 27. And Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 42. And later on that night, it's going to be partly cloudy with a low around 26. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So let's talk about extensions a little bit more. So remember I said failure to file and failure to pay. So at least if you file an extension, you're not going to have the failure to file. At such time, and assuming you're filing by the extension due date. I mean, if you never file after the extension due date, then that is deemed to be not filing. But you want to at least get in that extension. And the form you use for that is a, oh golly, I just kind of forgot the name of the form, 4868. I said it, had it in my head because we also do extensions sometimes for estates or trust. But so a 4868 is an application for an automatic extension of time to file a U.S. individual income tax return. So that 4868, it's fairly simple, especially if you don't think you're going to owe any taxes. You just look in the instructions to see where you have to mail it and mail it. And if you don't think you owe, you indicate that on that extension. If you think you owe, you indicate how much you think you owe and you send in a check with the extension and write in the memo your Social Security number and, you know, extension payment. Sometimes what we do for folks, if we really don't know what they might owe, we can, and let's say there's someone who regularly files quarterly payments, self-employed people, this happens to quite a bit. You know, sometimes we're waiting for that to see if they should fund a retirement account, or maybe we're waiting for a K-1 from a partner or something like that. So for clients who regularly have estimated tax payments, the nice thing about doing the extension is we can pay in what we think the client owes, but we also pay in the first quarter estimate. That way, if they owe more money, we've padded it and we have it covered. And then if we've paid in too much and they have an overpayment, we apply that to the first quarter estimate and then kind of make up, you know, the additional amounts in the subsequent estimated payments. So the extension is, it can be important for people who aren't filing their returns or aren't ready to file their returns. Now, when you do file for that extension, remember it's not an extension of time to pay. So you want to have an estimate of what you think you might owe. And if you're not sure, again, just kind of pay what you can on your best guess, basically. Then when you file for the extension, your return will now be due on October 15th. So it's a 6-month extension. In the old days, meaning like 2 or 3 years ago, there were 2 extensions. You would file, golly, and I'm trying to even remember, I think it was a 4-month extension and then a 2-month extension. And someone smart said, why bother doing 2 if we're going to give the people till October anyway? Why don't we just say the extensions for 6 months and just do once? And that was really smart. So you can extend your return to October 15th if you're a calendar year tax filer. Now, special rules do apply if you're in the military or if you live outside the United States. If you live outside the United States, there is an automatic 2-month extension. You really don't even have to file anything. You're just allowed this automatic 2-month extension. So instead of April 15th, it's June 15th. And then you pay your income tax. And this typically is if you're a U.S. citizen or a resident alien and you're just out of the country, like maybe for work. You have an automatic extension of 2 months. So then the return would be due June 15th. Military people, this happens to as well. And special rules, it says apply if you're in a combat zone too. So I don't know those specifically. But if you're in the military or naval service on duty outside the United States and Puerto Rico, you can have that automatic extension. Now, I do want to mention that the IRS website mentions that you can do your extension for free using FreeFile on their website. It says individual tax filers can e-file their extension form for free using FreeFile. So I imagine if you go on the IRS's website, irs.gov, and search the box, Form 4868, I would expect or would hope that there would be a link there to e-file your extension. Then, I remember I had said something about paying, then I think there are certain ways you can pay. So they have something called direct pay, and I am not familiar with this, but I printed off some information on it because I think we might see this more and more, and I do know for sure that more and more people are doing more automatic payments through either direct debit or direct deposit for their tax returns. We've had folks doing direct deposit for years and years and years and years for their refunds. They get them so much faster than paper filing, or for those people who still electronically file their return but want that paper check. Huge difference in the amount of time it takes to get that paper check in the mail compared to the direct deposit. I've always been more leery about direct debits on your tax returns because occasionally people will close bank accounts, and boy, if the IRS doesn't get their money, that makes me nervous, because if your bank account is closed, they can't withdraw the funds, or perhaps you forgot that you were going to pay the IRS on April 15th through direct debit, and you forgot to make sure that there was money in your account. But, you know, if you know how to control that, direct debit, direct deposit can work pretty well. But there's other ways to pay in this direct pay. This is what I was not as familiar with. And it says, what types of returns, notices, or payment plans can I apply my direct pay payment to? It says you can use direct pay to make payments on 1040, 1040A, 1040EZ, 1040ES, which is estimated tax payments, an installment agreement, an amended return, extensions to file, additional taxes on qualified plans, the health care payment, which used to be the shared responsibility payment. You cannot do business payments on it. And this is not the same as a credit card or debit card. The direct pay is literally made through an ACH debit from your bank account. So that is direct pay, but apparently you set up a direct pay account with the IRS. Again, I'm not as familiar with this. You'd have to go through it. There's like three pages of questions about direct pay, about scheduling future payments, which you can do, frequency of payments, which I expect would be helpful if you're doing estimated tax payments, same day payments. So if you're like late to the party, you can do your direct pay payment on April 17th if you want. And it's just lots and lots of opportunities there. It does say, does the IRS save my personal information? It says, no, with the direct pay, the IRS only uses your personal information to verify your identity and apply your payment to your tax record. So I expect that if you do something with direct pay, you have to make sure you keep your ID number handy. The credit cards and debit cards is also something the IRS allows, but I do believe it's through a different service and there is a fee for it. So that is something you might want to think twice about, understanding that this direct pay wouldn't have a fee. There's no fee assessed on the direct pay, but on the credit cards, there is some type of a fee. So that's if you want to get your payments there to the IRS. The good old-fashioned check still works. You just want to make sure that your payment that you're mailing in is in an envelope that has a good postmark to show that it's postmarked timely. Otherwise, it may be deemed to be late, and you don't want that to happen because you don't want a late filing, a late payment penalty. But I suppose it would only be for a day or so anyway, but just visit the IRS's website. So if you want to learn more about direct pay, whether it's to pay your tax return or to pay estimates, which I never use this, or I don't know if I've even had a client ever use it. We have the vouchers and they pay them. I guess part of the issue with direct pay is if you're not someone who watches your bank account regularly or daily, you don't want to forget about this because sometimes the quarterly estimate payments can be very, larger. So you wouldn't want that to get rejected if you had set it up to do, April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, January 15th. If you set it up for those days and you're not paying attention to your account, you certainly don't want to miss out on making those timely estimated tax payments. All right, so that's kind of extensions. You want to make sure that you file for an extension if you don't think you're going to get your tax return done, because at least then you could avoid the late filing penalty. Now, having said that, if you file for an extension and you say that you don't have any taxes due and you owe a lot of taxes, I'm just going to make up an example, and you owe $50,000 of taxes and you had said zero, they may not honor your extension because you weren't real with them. So if you're filing for an extension and saying you owe zero tax, thinking, well, that gal Lori said I could file for an extension and I don't have late filing penalties or late filing penalties. Well, if you file and you think you owe, pay something. Okay? So keep that in mind. Let's talk about estimates for a minute. So we were talking about extensions, and I talked about if you're going to do an extension and you're someone who has plenty of money and you normally do estimates, but this year, you have to file an extension because you don't think you have all the information, you can pad your extension with that first quarter estimate. So let's pretend you normally do a quarterly estimate of $1,000. And you think on your 2017 return, you're going to owe $500, and you know you have to do your quarterly payments. Well, you could do your extension with $1,500. That way, when you go to prepare your return and you realize you really did only owe the $5,000, you can apply the overpayment to your first quarter estimate, and boom, you're covered. But if conversely, you went and filed your return and it wasn't $500 you owed, it was $1,500 you owed, well, then at least you have your balance due covered, via that larger extension payment. And then sometimes what I do with people, if they didn't have their estimates enough in estimates to cover their taxes due or, you know, safe harbor issues, and they have the opportunity to have withholdings, whether it's from a job one of the spouses might have if they're married, or withholdings from an IRA or something, we can take extra money on withholdings, and the IRS deems that to be made evenly throughout the year. And that could cover some of that shortfall if you didn't do enough in estimates. You can up your withholdings to kind of make up for that. So there's little ways around this. Folks, when we come back, we're at our last break. We'll finish up. We have the last quarter of the hour. And we'll talk a little bit about some 2018 planning and also how to do some estimate planning for that as well. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back, everyone. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on this beautiful, lovely blue sky, sunny evening. We hope you're all relaxing and having a good time. For folks who are tuning in, if you have questions, I'm happy to answer any tax questions or whatever. The phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me or off air if you're more comfortable doing that. Just give your question to Lori C. She'll bring it into the studio. 610-758-8810. Maybe everyone's working on their tax return. And then I'm going to say I'm so proud of you. Get those tax returns done. When we talk about doing estimated tax payments, that is typically for folks who are not covering their income taxes due via federal withholding from the source. So typically when we work, our employer withholds federal taxes for us. When we take money out of our retirement account, our custodian or trustee can withhold federal taxes for us. If we, what else? Maybe Social Security. Some people have Social Security withhold income taxes, pensions, annuities. These are all providers or sources of income for us where we can request federal income tax withholdings. And we may or may not cover our tax due through that process. Where might we have income where we do not have withholdings? Interest, dividends, rental income, sometimes Social Security. A lot of people don't have their taxes withheld from Social Security. So there are a lot of sources of income where we may be receiving taxable income where we have not had withholdings. Capital gains is another big one. Capital gains where we're selling stocks or bonds or mutual funds, ETFs, or where mutual funds have distributed capital gains to us through the mutual funds themselves. So there's lots of income we could end up on our tax return that we're not having income tax withheld. It is in those situations where we either have to increase our withholdings from those other sources that do withhold to cover that tax due on that income, or we have to do quarterly estimated tax payments. Another reason why someone might do quarterly estimated tax payments is, if I did not mention this already, is self-employed people. If you have self-employment income, partnership income, that may be considered guaranteed payments, which would be subject to self-employment tax. There's income tax and self-employment tax that we have. So here's the thing where I see some people kind of get hung up. You might have not enough taxable income, or maybe you have taxable income but zero tax, because maybe some of your income is qualified dividends or capital gains and it's subject to zero tax if you're in a 15% tax bracket. So maybe your income's in a 15% bracket or lower, and some of that tax favored income's not getting income taxed, and maybe you had enough other deductions to wipe out your ordinary income such that while you might have taxable income, you have zero income tax. But if you're self-employed, you still will have self-employment tax if you've made a profit. So you might not realize you're going to have to do quarterly estimated tax payments to cover your self-employment tax, which is Social Security to those of us who are employed. But for other folks, it might be just that you have lots of other income sources that aren't getting taxed. So you want to make sure that you're withholding the proper amount. Here's where I could see people could get in trouble for 2018. Because you're so used to maybe having your federal withholding cover your the tax on that other income you have, maybe you withhold extra from your W-2 to cover the income tax on that investment income. But now, as an employee, the federal withholding tables have changed, and now your employer is going to withhold a lower amount. Maybe they had you update your W-4 and you kind of forgot that maybe years ago you had them withhold extra. Maybe you put zero exemptions and you have five kids. I don't know. Whatever might have happened. If your withholdings are going down for 2018, you may not have put two and two together that you may not have the same tax coverage for 2018 that you've done in the past. So you want to review your withholdings at some point in the year. Generally, what I tell folks is kind of look at your W-2 in September, print out a pay stub, and kind of run through your tax return and see what your income looks like, see what your withholdings look like, annualize it, and kind of do a double check to see if it's going to be enough to cover the income tax that you might have for 2018. And if it's not enough, then the beauty of doing it in September, if you're working, is you can up your withholdings. You can have them take out an extra dollar amount over the number of pay periods you have left to kind of make up the shortfall that you might have. Another time I see people get into trouble is employees who maybe get bonuses. And when the employers pay out the bonuses, sometimes they might withhold like 25% tax, like a flat amount, and you actually get a boost in those withholdings. And then the year you don't have a bonus, you don't realize that you don't have those extra withholdings that you thought you were going to get. So for folks who have erratic earnings, maybe through bonuses or commissions, you also want to keep a careful eye on your withholdings to make sure that you've paid in enough, and if you're not doing it through estimates. So let's pretend you have the withholdings, but you also do quarterlies. I have a lot of people who have withholdings and they still do their quarterly estimated tax payments. Go ahead and make them. I've had situations where in 2017, the income was really high because we had huge capital gains or lots of dividends. So the safe harbor rules, we want to pay in as much as we owed in the prior year. Maybe they're paying in the quarterlies are quite high, but they really think, gosh, are my gains really going to be as high in 2018? Well, if they're not going to be as high in 2018, if you start at least with Safe Harbor quarterly payments, then you at least won't be behind. And then if you do your little evaluation in September and you think, gosh, it really doesn't look like I'm going to owe as much tax, you keep an eye on it and you really don't have those same gains by December, then just don't do the fourth quarter payment. That's how you kind of manage your estimated tax payments and withholdings and things like that. There's lots of different ways to decide how much you're going to pay in. There's safe harbors. Again, 2018, I can see it's a transition year because we have tax reform. It's going to look really different. Just keep an extra eye on it this year. You also want to factor in changes such as marriage, if you get married, if you get divorced, filing status changes, children, if you're adding children to the brood or having children. Children may provide extra tax credits in 2018 that you hadn't had before. In 2017 and prior, we had exemptions for our dependents. Those are gone, gone, gone. They've doubled the standard deduction. This is going to be good for some people, not so good for other people, and limited some of the itemized deductions that people could take. Again, that could be bad for some people. You want to factor that in. But if you have children, they've expanded the thresholds for who is eligible to take child tax credits, and they've made those child tax credits much higher. They're now going to go from, I believe, $1,000 to $2,000, and the income threshold is up to like $400,000. They really, really expanded that. So in 2018, huge difference. Make sure you're planning for that if you're someone who has the ability to put money into a 401k at work. And boy, maybe you make $410,000 and you've never put money into the 401k. Well, if you're going to get a huge child tax credit now, if your income's under $400,000, I say you might want to review whether it makes sense for you to start contributing some amount to that 401k to get you under those thresholds whereby you will qualify for the child tax credit. So you want to play that as much as you can. As far as I'm concerned, tax credits are free money in essence for things you're paying for anyway. You're paying for your kids anyway. Sometimes we have education we're paying for anyway. When there's these tax credits, which are incentives to, you know, incentives for families, incentives for education, incentives for saving for retirement, you can take advantage of those and maximize those credits if you do a little pre-planning. Same thing happens with health savings accounts. I did a show on that several weeks ago. Health savings accounts, I see more and more of those. And for people who have high deductible health insurance, you would be eligible for participating in a health savings account and could get a deduction on page one if you're not doing it through your employer with payroll deduction. Yay, Karen. Karen has called in with a question. Karen from Bethlehem called. She's married, filing separate. Each spouse owns a home. Husband doesn't have enough income to use all his real estate taxes on itemizing. He suggests she uses two of his quarterly itemized deductions. Is this allowable? What documentation needed? Ex photocopy of canceled checks. One of the things I would talk about, Karen, with this spouse married filing separate. Now, people have various reasons for filing separately. Like you actually literally might be separate. And it sounds like if you each own a home, you really might be. But if you're still married, it might make sense to file married filing joint. Unless you're suspicious of one or the other's activities. Occasionally, I will see people file separately because one might be self-employed and, you know, the other doesn't want anything to do with that business. Maybe they don't like the business, the nature of the business, whatever it might be. So occasionally, I'll have two spouses who may file separately in that circumstance. Sometimes spouses are separated, not happy. Maybe they're on the verge of divorce. So they might, you know, angry with each other, they might want to file separately. But married filing separate is the worst filing status. You own the home. He owns the home. You're filing separate. I really can't see how you could get his deduction unless you filed married filing joint because you're not owning the home and you didn't pay the real estate taxes. It would be different if you also owned the home and paid the real estate taxes. Then I could see where, you know, you could take both for both houses. But in this circumstance, I'm not quite seeing it. But you could have a conversation if there's no other reason for filing separate other than you live separately. I would have a conversation about filing jointly. You can always go from married filing. Let's see, what is it? I think you can go from married filing separate to joint, but you can't switch your mind. Change your mind from married filing joint to separate. So make sure you know what you want to do, but think that through. But Karen, that's a great question. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. Folks, we're almost done with tonight. And I just want to remind folks, we're here every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. Lots of information. And we don't just talk about taxes the rest of the year. I just focus on that during tax season. Next week, in fact, I'm done talking about taxes. I don't want to talk about taxes anymore. We're going to talk about retirement planning considerations. What do you have to think about when you're getting ready for retirement? I thought of this because I thought tax season's coming to the end. What else comes to an end? Work life. So I thought, let's talk about retirement planning considerations. So that's what we'll do next week. I really appreciate the call tonight, Karen. Thank you, Lori. Thanks for being here. Shondi, thanks for being here. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.